This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is Chris Teague. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, as always, for having me, Jack. How are you?
I am terrific, and I guess you had a little outing with the kids today, and I hope that was fun. Your wife and children and at the beach and doing, I think, at the beach. Tell me about it.
We were not on the beach. We were on the rocky coast of Maine, which I think most people probably think is all that we have. But nice day. The end of summer is coming, so kids are getting ready to go back to school in some capacity, and the weather is cooling off, so trying to enjoy it while we can. How about you?
Yeah, are you getting a little hint of fall? I mean, oddly, the trees in front of my house, and I'm on the West Coast, think it's fall, and some of the leaves are falling already. You know, it's August. What's happening?
Yeah, we're getting there. Last week, we were close to being in the 90s, and this week, we have barely cracked the 75-degree mark. It's down in the 50s overnight, so I think we're on our way there.
Yeah. Well, you, of course, report for a bunch of different websites, including DrivingToday.com and Forbes.com and others. Ford Connection, is that correct?
Ford Authority.
Ford Authority, yeah. Is Ford Connection your arch competitor? You hate those people? Or?
I don't know if they're a thing, but if they are, then definitely.
Yeah, then we hate them. And I, of course, write for some of those sites, too. Of course, Driving Today and Forbes.com and Auto Vitel and J.D. Power and, geez, just a bunch of places now, and it's fun to do. We road test vehicles is one of the things we do for a living. And in the road test segment today, I'm going to be talking about the all-new 2021 Chevrolet Suburban. And what are you going to be talking about, Chris?
I will not be talking about an all-new vehicle, but I will be talking about the 2020 Dodge Durango.
Oh, okay. Well, new enough. Certainly new to you. Didn't NBC used to say that about some of their television shows, their reruns? If you haven't seen it, it's new to you.
I think they did.
Yeah. Well, in our interview segment, we're going to be talking to a very interesting guy, a very articulate guy I had a chance to talk with not long ago. His name is Paul Hennessy. He is the CEO of Vroom, V-R-O-O-M. You've undoubtedly seen their commercials on television. They'll drop a car off at your house if you let them. So we'll talk to him about that. They certainly have changed the way of doing business during this COVID crisis. It's certainly been, in some ways, a business boon to them. It's been terrible for many of us, but from a business side, that's something that has changed the way a lot of people do business. So we'll talk a bit about that, but let's talk about news first. And I think both you and I share kind of the same story as our top story. Talk a bit about it.
I think that was our coincidence of the day, and this is something that I know that you pay a lot of attention to, but the new J.D. Power study, it is the 2020 U.S. Tech Experience Index, if I'm not mistaken, Jack?
Yes, it's almost like taxi. It's TXI is what they call it.
Anyway, one of the biggest things they found was that drivers really appreciate having cameras in their car. It was one of the thing that they were most enamored with out of all the technology in their car, and that's not just backup cameras. That's also side mirror cameras and the 360 view cameras that a lot of newer vehicles have, and then I guess even on off-road vehicles, the cameras that they stick in the bumper so you can see the rocks and things in front of the vehicles. But that was the thing out of all the technology in the vehicles that owners said they were most enamored with.
Yeah, and then there's something that they were not enamored with at all, and that is this gesture technology. It's just, it seemed, when I was listening to Kristen Kolodge talk about it, it sounded like kind of a disaster for the automakers, because many of them have made a lot about the fact that they have gesture control for a lot of the systems in the car now, and people are pretty much hating it. At best, they're turning it off, and at worst, they're just despising it. So that's not the best.
I can see that.
Yeah. Well, in terms of brands that rank well in for this, and its technical innovation is really what J.D. Power is trying to reward, Volvo was ranked the highest overall in their innovation index with a score of 617. This is on a 1,000-point scale, so everybody's got a long way to go, I guess. And Hyundai was ranked highest among the mass market segment with a score of 556. So again, a long way to go to achieve perfection, but those are the brands that are doing a really good job in terms of technical innovation. And this really rewards new technologies. There are technologies that are kind of old hat, among them voice control, which doesn't seem to be going very well, but that's not regarded as all that new. And then there are these newer technologies. And you get bonus points for that in this particular study. And it is a study made of a bunch of individuals who are driving cars. It's something like 85,000 people or on that order. It's actually 82,527
wow.
owners of 2020 model year vehicles.
Well, that's a tough one, though, right? Because the study asked them what they thought after the first 90 days. And so for a lot of people, these new technologies, there's going to be a curve, a learning curve there.
Yeah,
so.
There'd be a honeymoon period or a lack, you know, I guess a learning curve is more so than a honeymoon in this case. But you're right. I think maybe over time they would learn to like some of this stuff better. But also over that 90 days, what they have found is a lot of people just give up on this, on some of the stuff that they don't like and off they go and just say, I don't really care about that anymore. So interesting there. Another interesting thing to me is the fact that there's going to be at least a somewhat renewed, if not totally all new, Mazda CX-9. That is Mazda's three-row SUV. I think one that I like a lot, and you probably do too.
I think I do too. In fact, I know I do. It was one of the first vehicles I reviewed a while back, but it's such a great driver for a larger, you know, three-row SUV. So looking forward to seeing the next version of that.
Right. They're redoing the interior. And of course, we've liked the interior for a long time. It kind of channels, I would say, Audi design, things like that. That's going on, and we'll see. They have a new carbon edition model. Everybody's going to these blackout edition models in one shape or another. And so that will be announced very soon. It should be in dealerships later this month, and we don't have long to go because we're getting late in the month of August here. But that 2021 Mazda CX-9 will be arriving soon.
Can't wait for it.
Yeah. Another vehicle arriving soon is the 2021 Ford GT. And you're probably going to buy one in each color, right, Chris?
Yeah, maybe three. You never know.
Yeah. Well, it's the this time around, it's a tribute to the winner of the 1966 Daytona 24-Hour Continental, which I guess was a great thing. It really was a great thing. Ken Miles and Lloyd Ruby were the guys mm-hmm. who did it. Ken Miles, of course, immortalized in the recent Ford versus Ferrari movie. Lloyd Ruby was a stock car racer, interestingly enough, who was also involved in endurance racing. So that was interesting and raced for Ford. And this car will kind of echo that car in some ways, kind of in color and kind of in shape. And we'll see it sooner. And it'll cost probably a lot more than that race car costed in race trim to race there at Daytona in the 24-hour race when it did in 1966. When you were a glimmer in your parents' eyes, perhaps your parents weren't even born in 1966. Right, Chris?
I think you're probably close. They might have been right around then.
Wow. Wow. So there you go. Well, in any case, that is the news, and when we come back, we will be doing road testing, and again, the 2021 Chevrolet Suburban, and remind us of the vehicle you're road testing, Chris.
The 2020 Dodge Durango.
Ah, the Dodge Durango. Yeah, I like saying that. I'm not sure why, but I like saying that, and I actually like driving it. There's a lot to like about the Dodge Durango, actually, but we'll tell you more about that in the next segment, so stay with us. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you. We're glad you're with us, and stay with us as we come back on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you. Road test time here on America on the Road. We live to drive cars. We live to drive and drive to live, and we're happy to do that. And interesting vehicles we believe we have for you, although hardly race cars this time around. We're talking about somewhat massive, one more massive than the other, three-row vehicles. I was driving the all-new, and that's something that you don't say about the Chevy Suburban all the time, but it is all new for 2021 and a lot of tech changes to it. And then you were driving the Dodge Durango, which is not exactly all new, but has a lot to say about it and a lot to be liked about it. At least I think so. Why don't you tell me what you think, Chris?
Absolutely. I think we'll see a new one, I think, in a couple of years. And we'll see a Hellcat variant of the Durango next year in a very limited run. But I was driving the 2020 more mainstream Dodge Durango. However, we were talking about them not being race cars, Jack. I did test the SRT model. So this is the hottest version currently available. It's 6.4 liter V8. That's 392 cubic inches. And they make sure that you know that with big red numbers on the side of the car. It's 475 horsepower, 470 pound-feet of torque. I believe it does 0 to 60 somewhere around 5 seconds. It definitely feels that fast from the driver's seat, from the bum in the seat feel. I will say that
I wouldn't call you a bum. You might call yourself that, but I don't know.
Trying to keep it family-friendly.
Yes.
But so I've driven the Durango GT was the one I drove before this. I've driven three different 2020 variants, and I can say that they're all very comfortable. This the third row is fully usable. I could probably ride back there as a 6-foot-tall man. My children definitely had no problem fitting in the way back, as they like to call it. And then the center row, the second row, is captain's chairs, which makes it a lot easier to climb through, especially for kids. Now, the drive for the SRT, it's a V8 forward vehicle, and it's very loud. It's very sporty. It has adjustable drive settings that change damper controls and steering input and things like that. I would say that is almost overkill unless you're absolutely into having a muscle car and an SUV wrapped into one, which may be the case for a lot of us with only a few spots in our driveway. But for most people, the trim like the GT will be just fine. It's got FCA's. I think it's a 3.5 or a 3.6 liter V6. It's the Pentastar. It's been in almost everything, right, Jack, for several years?
Yeah. It's in my wallet. I mean, I have one in my bedroom. They're everywhere. Ubiquitous.
And that one is more than peppy enough for family hauling. And unless you're really just looking for a sporty vehicle, the SRT is definitely overkill. Having said that, the vehicle itself is fun to drive. It's got a smooth ride. I think it looks great. I've always loved the current generation Durango's looks. You're able to get a nice high driving position, so there's great outward visibility from the front. And just talking about cameras, in the last segment, the Durango's rear view camera on the 8.4 inch Uconnect screen in that I had in my test unit. It's very easy to see. It's high definition. It's bright. FCA's Uconnect, that's Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, Uconnect infotainment system is one of the best, if not the best, that I have used on the market, especially now that they're getting new features for the SRT and those models that are performance oriented. So all around, a good vehicle. I can say that it's starting to show its age, especially in the technology department, but it won't disappoint in most areas, especially if you've got kids and towing that need to be done, or kids to be hauled and towing to be done.
Yeah,
there we go.
Well, and I think you point that out, and it's a good thing to point out, because a lot of these specialty, you know, super fast vehicles then are not practical at all. But the Durango in SRT form actually is. It really has, you know, great tow rating. It's a good tow vehicle. It contains a lot of people. It's a really good all-around vehicle that you can have fun driving. I think it will lay waste to a lot of import SUVs that are supposedly sporty. And that's cool. It'll do it a lot cheaper than the import SUVs as well. I really like this vehicle a lot. I like the fact that FCA is still putting vehicles like this together when other people are other car companies are backing away and just giving us pablum, pablum, pablum. It's a fun vehicle. I think it's terrific. And the fact that it's still practical and you can take a family for a vacation on it and then blow the doors off something, you know, at the drive-in while you're doing it, not a bad thing.
Yeah, you know, the towing capacity, 8,700 pounds. I think the biggest downfall here, and you probably guessed it, is fuel economy. I averaged around 18 miles per gallon on the highway, and that's even shy of what the EPA estimates. But that's to be expected with a, you know, 5,000 plus pound SUV and a gigantic V8. But as you say, it's useful, and it is a heck of a lot of fun, too.
Yeah. Well, I would not say that the new Chevy Suburban is fun in the same way, but it is sure a great vehicle to take the family on vacation with. It's just kind of crazy good. And it has just gotten better in the 2021 form, which is way different in a lot of ways. It's not different so much from an appearance standpoint. It is all new sheet metal and everything, but it looks like Suburban. But underneath the skin, I mean, the suspension, for example, an independent rear suspension with magnetic ride control, air ride adaptive suspension. This is a nameplate that has been around for 85 years, which is even longer than I've been around. So I appreciate that. Not many nameplates can make that claim. And there's just a lot of stuff to like about it, from the infotainment systems to the safety stuff, the technologies. You can get a turbo diesel engine in this thing as well, as many as 420 horsepower out of a 6.2 liter V8. 10-speed automatic transmission. This is just a really good vehicle, and it has gotten better. I mentioned the independent rear suspension. It also has a longer wheelbase, and that translates into good stuff in terms of interior space. In fact, in terms of cubic feet of cargo room, it goes from, it was already mammoth in terms of cargo space, 121.7 cubic feet of cargo. It goes to 144.7. So just a mammoth amount of room. There's more third row leg room. There's more cargo room behind the third row by a considerable margin. And that space is gigantic, 41.5 cubic feet behind the third row. And that third row is really a genuine third row. It's not, I'm just going to throw the kids back there and hope they don't, you know, mess up each other because they're so cranky. Just genuinely liked this vehicle. It's a little bit intimidating when you walk up to it and the hood is about at your chin. And I'm not a short guy. I'm 5'11 or something. I know you brag about being 6 feet tall, but I'm not quite that tall, but I am 5'11. And when you walk up to it and your chin is coming to the hood line, you're going, how am I going to get into this thing? But then it has a step that extends out and you climb in. Of course, we had the high country version, which is nice. That is the highest version. With automatic load leveling, it'll actually stoop down to pick you up a little bit, too. It can adjust in terms of ride height up to 4 inches. So that's good. It will lower the ride height by 3/4 of an inch just to improve aerodynamics as you're driving along. So that's kind of neat. And then it has all kinds of safety equipment. It has HD rear vision camera. It has cameras everywhere. Automatic emergency braking, forward collision alert, following distance indicator, front pedestrian braking. When it sees a front pedestrian, it brakes, for example. Rear park assist, which is good. And it has hitch guidance, so you can hook up your trailer a lot easier. I like the high country in some ways. Maybe the high country badging on the side of the flanks of the thing are a little over the top. I mean, they're like a foot tall. It's kind of amazing for badges on a car, but, and it has, sill plates and seat embroidery and, some color and trim choices that are specific to the high country. It features the 6.2 liter V8 engine. And magnetic ride control is standard, so that's great. 22-inch wheels with chrome inserts. And then it has all the safety stuff, rear pedestrian alert, head-up display, surround vision to help you park, because it's kind of like parking a super tanker. But, you know, this is a vehicle that is light on its feet for being almost as big as a school bus. So it's a vehicle I like a lot.
I think I agree with you. I haven't driven the 2021 yet, but I drove a 2020 model with the magnetic ride control, and I think that they did a wonderful job at hiding the kind of truck bones of the Suburban. And, the interior at that point, and correct me if I'm wrong, for 2021, it was a step behind the Ford Expedition in quality, but it was extremely comfortable. I love GM or Chevy's infotainment system. I think it's colorful. It's neat. It's easy to use. So I can't wait to get behind the wheel of the 2021.
Right. Well, I think you'll like it. And I only had it for a day, so I would like to take a family vacation in it. And I probably never actually leave the truck. There's a swimming pool in there somewhere. I can do some sunning, read a novel, and do all that stuff while in the Suburban. So that's going on. And when we come back, we will take listener questions. Beware. So be ready for that. We'd like to have your listener questions, and we'll cover that when we come back with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad with you on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you, and it is question and answer time right here on America on the Road. It's a segment that Chris and I dread. Oh, I shouldn't say that. That's not true at all. We absolutely love. I said dread, but I meant love. We love answering your questions for you. We've learned a lot over the years in covering the auto industry, and we want to deliver that information to you free of charge via this podcast. So reach us with your listener question if you'd like. info@editor@drivingtoday.com are two ways to reach us. editor@drivingtoday.com, maybe the best one. And Chris, what is a listener question you have for us today?
I have a softball for you today, Jack, I hope. It's one of the ones.
I hope so, too.
So people hear us talking a lot about horsepower and torque. So we talk about a car and we say, like the Durango, 475 horsepower and, you know, 400 whatever pound-feet of torque. And the question today is, what is the difference between horsepower and torque, or why is one important and one not? Or can you clarify that for us?
Well, I'll try. It's somewhat complex, and I'm not all that complex a thinker. I would look at it this way. Most people, when they think about power, actually are feeling torque. If you're accelerating from a stop sign, say, or if you suddenly wade into the accelerator to get more acceleration on the highway, what you really are utilizing there is torque, which is pulling power, basically. Horsepower will take you to top speed, but pulling power kind of moves you forward rapidly, is a way to describe it, I guess, in kind of layman's terms. You know, there are scientific definitions of those things, but actually that's what it's about. And so when a related topic to that is the flat torque curve that we're always touting, because it's a great thing. When torque is pretty even throughout the rev range of the car, it used to be that engines were very peaky in terms of torque. They might have a lot of peak torque at a particular RPM, but they only achieved that at a very narrow range on the rev band. And today, especially with turbocharging, and that's one of the benefits of this low-pressure turbocharging that we're seeing, is the torque band can be very wide and about equal across many, many different RPM ranges. And so does that help at all?
It does, absolutely.
Good. Well, I hope it helps the listener. I guess we can't ask them too easily, you know, right now, whether that helped or not.
Yeah, them more than me.
And I hope that helped. That was the answer to our listener question. Again, we'd love to take your listener question. So reach us at editor@drivingtoday.com. Of course, Driving Today is our sister website to America on the Road. And stay with us, everybody. We will be right back with an interview with Paul Hennessy. He is the CEO of Vroom, the used car dealer that will deliver cars to you practically wherever you are. Kind of like, you know, Postmates will deliver food to you. They'll deliver a car. So we'll talk to him about that. They really changed the retailing model for used cars and very innovative. So stay with us for that interview with Paul, with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad, and we're so glad you're with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you. And a special guest is with us. His name is Paul Hennessy. He is CEO of Vroom. It's kind of hard to say for me. I don't know why. You probably say Vroom all the time, and you say it well, but it's a V-R-O-O-M, Vroom. You've seen it advertised on TV, certainly. And Paul, thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate being here.
Setting the stage, why don't you tell our listeners, they've undoubtedly seen your ads, they probably have some sense of what you do, but why don't you give our listeners an idea of exactly what Vroom is and what it does?
Sure. I think the best way to think about Vroom is a innovative e-commerce company that fundamentally gives buyers and sellers of used vehicles a better way to execute. So it's fundamentally a better way to buy and a better way to sell. And we do that by offering, great selection, great pricing, easy transaction, a frictionless e-commerce transaction. And then kind of finish that off with an unbelievable driveway experience, which of course is now more important than ever, contact free.
Right.
And so really the way to think about it is everything that you could possibly do in a dealership, both on the buy side and the sell side, without ever having to go to a dealership again.
Right. Well, I mean, your ads depict a vehicle being delivered to a very happy person getting that vehicle, and rightly so. I mean, it's always great to get a new car. Right. Talk a bit about that experience and how you got there, how you decided this is the way you wanted to approach this portion of the business.
Yeah, I think the underlying issue for customers has been just a level of dissatisfaction with the current dealership model, and by that I mean there's often asymmetrical information. Customers walk in, at a disadvantage. There's a lack of transparency on pricing, and then when it comes to the world of e-commerce these days, everyone is leaning towards having things brought directly to them in an on-demand world. And so what Vroom has done is really assemble all of those things: transparency in pricing, great selection, great delivery, and then tailor that to the world that we live in, which is reach into your pocket, pull out your phone, and do the entire transaction, from your couch. We bring all of those features together so that the customer can have, a great driveway experience. So it's really just taking all the friction out of the traditional model, all of the frustration out of the traditional model, bringing it online, and then satisfying the customers again through a contact-free delivery.
Right. Let's talk a bit about pricing and how you go about that. Certainly, one of the difficulties with consumers and the traditional dealer experience is the negotiation factor. They're uncomfortable largely negotiating. They're never sure whether they got a good deal or not, even when they've consummated the deal. Oftentimes there's buyer remorse. How do you address that at Vroom?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jack. And honestly, negotiation is actually a big dissatisfier for customers, to the point that you made. Even if they end up negotiating, they walk away still wondering if they got a great deal. And so what Vroom does is we've assembled world-class data scientists to understand all of the data that's available in the marketplace. That helps us buy better, so we actually can afford to get the right cars at the right price. And when we price them for customers, again, they're competitively priced. Because we know, we know exactly what that car's value is. So rather than try to make a few extra dollars out of a customer and then create an environment where the customer feels the need to negotiate, we just make it a no-haggle environment. But you have to do that by giving customers great pricing, and that's what Vroom does. So when customers can get a great price, and by the way, they know that because there are other places that they can search and compare, when Vroom delivers a great price, then they don't feel the need to negotiate.
Right, right. And that negotiation factor is a tough one for so many people, and taking that out of the equation, and at the same time giving the people the sense that they're getting a very good price, is just good business all the way around. It makes sense.
That's right. Doesn't?
Let's talk a bit about selection. There's a lot of vehicles on the market, about something like, I guess last year, 17 million new cars were sold, maybe 45 million or so used vehicles were sold. That's a little more nebulous figure. Tell us about Vroom's ability to give selection to the visitor.
Sure. Well, again, I'll speak to two key points. If you think about the traditional used car dealership, you know, what they have on their lot is fundamentally based on what has walked onto their lot and what have they purchased from consumers via maybe a trade or something like that. So customers have to go from lot to lot to lot to find what they're looking for. And that's obviously a difficult and very time-consuming process. With Vroom, again, we've got nationwide data. So we understand what are the most popular cars that customers are buying, what, by the way, by price classification. And then what we do is we go out and secure those cars, again, at attractive pricing, so that you've got a full end-to-end selection, whether it's low-priced cars, middle-tier price cars, or, you know, when I say cars, I mean all vehicles, trucks. And so we've got the gamut. And so customers don't have to go from place to place to place. They can start with one single website at vroom.com and then find what they're looking for. And so I think that we just, by harnessing that, it's time efficient. And because we're showing cars that we know are in high demand, consumers don't have to look very far because it's almost like we're reading their minds because we use data to inform which cars we should have in our selection.
How do you acquire most of your inventory? Do you get them in trade? Do you buy cars from individuals? Do you go to auctions? And, you know, what manners do you use to get your inventory?
Yeah, again, as a nationwide e-commerce company, the answer is yes, yes, and yes to all of those. We've got obviously we take trade-ins from other consumers as they're, you know, maybe upgrading a vehicle just or changing out a vehicle. So trade is a key chunk of our business. We also buy cars directly from consumers. You know, consumers can come to our website. Give us a VIN or a license plate, answer a few questions, and we'll give them a real-time appraisal on that vehicle. They love that, as you might expect. Again, there's no negotiation, and it's not a price range. It's actually a guaranteed offer, so customers can choose to select that offer. Of course, they can shop it. We give them time to shop it if they like. What we find is they shop it and then come back and say, hey, that's a great price for my vehicle. I'll sell it that way. We buy from OEMs and that, you know, traditional cars that are coming off of lease, for instance. So we go upper funnel there, and then whatever we don't get from consumers or through trade-ins or from OEM transactions, then of course there's a large auction business, and we fill in our business with cars at auction. So it's a full suite of you know, sources to acquire you know, our selection.
Do you have inventory across the country in multiple locations, or how do you go about, you know, it's a big country, as you well know, having to service it. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, the answer is yes. We do have our vehicles spread in about 13 of our reconditioning facilities across the country. We're scaling those reconditioning facilities to, you know, you know, by early next year, we'll probably double that amount, and then we'll continue to scale that. But for the consumer, it doesn't really matter where the car is because we'll bring it directly to them. So if it turns out that they live in Seattle and they've fallen in love with one of our cars that happens to be in Orlando, we'll ship that car directly to the customer in Seattle. So the customer doesn't need to worry about where the car is. They just need to make sure they find the one that they're looking for and then fall in love, as we say. So
yeah, I'd say the only worry they have is, you know, if there's large transportation costs involved in getting that car to them in Orlando from Seattle or vice versa, then it would be an issue.
Well, that's true. But, you know, we today charge a flat fee for that. So we're not really taking that out of the customer. We charge a flat $599 fee. And so, again, we did a lot of research on that with customers, and they understand when you're moving a large object, you know, from one side of the country to the other, that there's a cost associated with that. And by the way, even in the new car industry, as you know well, there's a delivery charge that consumers are paying, even if they're buying it directly from a dealership. It's, you know, kind of in that entire bundle of.
Yeah, and a lot of times that destination charge is over $1,000, you know, sometimes $1,200, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know that well. So we haven't found, and by the way, here's the other thing, because we offer financing and many of our customers finance, they can roll that charge directly into their monthly payments. And honestly, that has not been a blocker for our customers or a dissatisfier. Because again, when you have great pricing on your vehicle, if in fact it takes us, you know, some cost to move it, they would have paid that anyway, even at their local dealership. So.
Right. We're talking with Paul Hennessy. He's CEO of Vroom, and we thank him so much for being with us. Why don't you walk our listeners through a typical transaction? Let's say I'm coming in, I have a 4 or 5 year old trade-in, and I want to trade that in as opposed to sell that, and I want to buy a new used vehicle, I guess, from Vroom. Walk us through that, would you?
Yeah, sure. And here's, you know, a fun insight that we've learned in building our business. Different consumers perform in different ways. Some customers come in and they say, before I do a single thing, I want to understand the value of my car. So if that's where customers want to start, great. They can get a quick appraisal, as I've described, get an appraisal on their vehicle in real time. And then they say, okay, my car is worth X. Other customers want to fall in love first, so that they search and say, oh, let me find my next car and then see what I can get for my existing vehicle. And then yet other customers want to understand what will there be approved for from a lender in terms of total amount of monthly payment that they can afford, and then shop that way. Vroom is agnostic to what the customer wants to do. We're obviously very customer centric. So if customers want to start with their trade, if they want to start first fall in love with their next car, or want to understand what they'll be financed for, we let all of that happen. If in fact they start with, let me find my next car, they can pick out a car, they can apply for credit, they can do all of that online. If they need human support, we also have that as a service if they want to talk to a live person to answer particular questions. We can then price their trade.
It's good that you employ live people. I think that's a good customer service there.
Yes, we love it, and our customers love it, and we've just taken a very light approach. We don't force customers to go unassisted. If they like the assistance, sometimes, you know, this is a very large transaction, maybe the second largest of a customer's life. We like to have people standing by just to help them with some basic questions. And so anyway, they can get financed for their car. They can add on a warranty extension if they like. They can add on, you know, wheel and tire insurance, whatever the customers are looking for. They can do that all online or with a human assist. We'll price their trade, and then they can do the entire transaction. And then what we'll do is finish, you know, what we call the final reconditioning on their car, you know, make sure that the car is spit shined and gassed and ready to go. And then we'll put it on a truck and deliver it directly to the customer's home or work, whatever they choose.
Right. And how does you consummate the transaction right there? Do you do it electronically on the spot, or have you already done that? You know, how does that work out?
Yeah, it's fantastic. We can price loans. We do all of that in transaction, so the customers don't really have to wait. It's really at the customer pacing. So if the customer want to spend a lot of time shopping, spend a couple of days shopping, maybe get their partner on board, but when they're ready to pull the trigger, it's a really quick transaction. It's minutes to complete the transaction, and then of course, depending on where they live, it's, you know, a couple of days to ship the car to them.
Right. Right. Well, and that's a big satisfier, is getting that done quickly. There's competitive actions out there. I think your competitors at Shift are doing something transaction-wise even this week or imminent. You know, Carvana is out there, certainly visible. What do you think is Vroom's special sauce versus the other guys in this space?
Yeah, it's a great question. And yes, I have tracked the Shift news. It looks like they're going to be spinning their business into a public company. And Carvana has been, out ahead of us. And so we'll probably have three public companies all operating slightly different. What I'd remind you, Jack, is that this market, as you mentioned, is north of 40 million annual units. And by the way, it's, you know, the top 100 players in the space only have about 9% market share. So it's a massive market. So we're not concerned that this is going to be a winner take all or even winner take most market. So we believe that companies like Shift will be successful. We believe Carvana will continue to be successful. And obviously, You know, Vroom has demonstrated its success and will continue to be successful. So that fragmentation and massive market size, you know, $840 billion in annual revenue, there's lots of room for us all to play. What I think you'll find at Vroom is an end-to-end e-commerce company, which really appeals to consumers. Everything that they want to do, from pricing, selection, lending, you know, warranty edition, everything they could possibly do, you know, from their homes, on their phone if they choose, and then with a great delivery experience. So our view is what Vroom offers is a world-class end-to-end e-commerce solution, and customers are voting because, you know, Vroom grew at 150% in the first quarter of this year, and even through, you know, the global pandemic, in March and April, those were Vroom's two highest unit sales months in our company's history. So people are really leaning into the model because of all of the things that it
right.
offers.
Can you share those volume figures, unit sales figure?
Well, you know what? I'll point you to our S1, which, you know, we filed. But what we have been sharing, you know, just the absolute growth numbers in terms of year over year. Well, I mean, what I can tell you is that our e-commerce revenue in 2019 was almost $600 million. So it's a massive number, and you know, again, scaling in triple digits.
Right. I think it will only get bigger. What are your growth projections like?
Well, yeah, we don't get too forward looking now, especially, by the way, that we're a public company. So, you know, during the windows that we can talk, we'll give appropriate guidance all at once. We're bullish with a massive market, massively fragmented, and I would say more importantly, with e-commerce coming our way. You know, the auto industry, as you know, is only has about 1%, or in the first quarter had 1% e-commerce penetration. So compared to all of the other verticals, it's grossly under-indexed. So this whole business is kind of coming our way. E-commerce is accelerating, and the digitization of auto is really starting to accelerate. So we just think there's just lots of opportunity for Vroom to serve our customers well and scale.
Yeah. Unless there's anything else you'd like to add, we can bid adieu.
No, I thank you for having me on your show, and appreciate the time.
Thank you. You too. And we've had Paul Hennessy, CEO of Vroom, with us. Thanks so much, Paul, for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that was our interview with Paul Hennessy of Vroom. Innovative stuff. Really great thinking going on there at Vroom in ways to help the used car buyer and deliver a much better experience than they've had before. So thanks to Paul for that. And also thanks to Chris Teague, our inimitable co-host, who breaks free to talk with us at least once a week from his home in Maine. So thanks so much for being with us, Chris. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack. I'm going to go grab a dictionary and figure out what that word means. But in the meantime, I will ask everyone, if you like what you're hearing here, you like listening to us yammer on for half an hour or so, I'll ask you to leave us a review, good or bad, hopefully good, on wherever you get your podcasts. And that'll help us continue to grow and continue climbing up those charts, I hope.
Yes, and if you don't understand the word, it's probably because I mispronounced it, Chris, which is something I do very frequently. Something I won't mispronounce, though, is the title of my new book. It is called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. I'd love to encourage you to look for that on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, Apple Books. It's all over the place. It's ubiquitous. And all over the place, too. So look for that, and I'd appreciate that. If you like the show, I think you'll like the book. And I'd like to invite you to join us again next time right here on America on the Road, again with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad. We thank you so much for being with us, and we hope you'll join us again next time right here on America on the Road.